From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes Podcast for January 22nd.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know why it's more ominous than any other podcast we've had. That's because ominous music
one
you were playing there.
And the double twos and then the one and the zero. It's all
good.
Binary and then some twos in there. Man,
easy.
It's in the Kabbalah, man.
Easy, easy there, computer geek. Also known as Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. And so got some interesting politics stuff to talk about this week. We'll talk about the governor and the legislative leader's trip to D.C. in a moment.
I can hardly wait.
That's the stay tuned moment of the podcast.
Anthony loves field trips.
But let's start talking about field poll.
That was pretty good.
It's
pretty good.
Always struggling for a transition. So two field polls of note that are going to be talked about a lot this week, one in the race for the U.S. Senate, and then the one that comes out today on Friday that you're hearing this, in the race for governor in California. Let's start with the governor's race. Let's start with the new one.
Okay.
How about that?
Let's start
with the new poll. So this is going to, going to be a lot of chatter about this poll, I think.
Why don't you get us started then?
Right. I know. It's early in the race. We all have to say that, you know, a lot of things can change and that polls are only snapshots in time. With that caveat, the field poll shows once Tom Campbell, the Republican one-time candidate for governor, got out of that race and flipped to the Senate, both races changed, according to Field, fairly substantially. In the governor's race now, Meg Whitman, the former CEO of eBay, has a 28-point lead on Insurance Commissioner Steve Poizner, 45-17, with 38% of likely Republican voters undecided. 28-point lead for Meg Whitman. You're going to hear an awful lot about
that's
that
big one. Yep.
And then quickly in the general election matchups, according to Field right now, between still undeclared Jerry Brown. Is he running?
I don't know. He seems to be walking at this point.
That's good. That's a nice one. He's walking, not running. In the theoretical general election matchups, Brown would beat Whitman 46-36. However, that's a 10-point lead versus he had a 21-point lead just 3 months ago over Whitman. Over Poizner, he would win by 17, but 3 months ago he had a 25-point lead over Poizner. So tightening there for the Brown numbers, again, early in the race. But, you know, the first big headline, Whitman with a 28-point lead, according to Field, over Steve Poizner. So what do you think?
I think that Meg Whitman has had the airwaves to herself. She's been on radio since September.
A lot of radio.
We saw numbers from her campaign today saying that she's spent $19 million so far. Actually spent. Her campaign has actually spent that money. She backfilled that today, chipping in another $20
million. And spent that in 2009.
In 2009,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So before the election year ever began.
And before a single television commercial has aired. So without TV is always the most costly part of any campaign. And before TV, in the odd numbered years, she spent $19 million. And I think that these poll numbers show that having the airwaves to herself, even the radio airwaves, has moved numbers, and that Whitman is the one candidate for governor who is declared for governor who's actually seen her poll numbers move in a positive direction.
She's seen some bang for the buck, I guess, in some ways, I think a lot of people would say. So she's I think the calculation, what, now that she's put in about $40 million of her own money into this race?
39 so far, yes.
Yeah, 39. Yeah. Hey, you know, let's round it. Come on, rounding error.
Okay, rounding.
So $39 million, she's easily approaching, I think, already the record for anybody self-financing in California, which I still think is Al Checky.
I think it is Al Checky, $40 million-ish.
Yeah. So she's already at Al Checky levels before the primaries ever happened.
She has better hair.
I'm not sure. I just can't approach that one at all.
There's a plug joke in there somewhere, but I'm going to move on. Move on.
That's Anthony York, folks, in case direct your questions and queries to.
I'm not only a customer.
Yes.
Wait, never mind.
Okay. But she spent about $40 million already. So, you know, getting up there at the Checky record, surpassed the Steve Wesley record. And she has said she'd spend upwards of $100, $150 million if needed on this campaign. This is going to be an expensive race. The Poizner people are, I'm sure, going to provide us their own perspective on this 28-point gap. But You know,
it's the question, early, John. It's early.
But the question is, what does Steve Poizner do? How do you know? When does he? You know, he's put his own money in the race, nowhere near as much as Whitman has done. But when's he? You know, when does he engage? I think a lot of people said, you know, I think you and I both heard this, that when Campbell got out of the race, which has been what, 2 weeks now?
If that
one
long,
week?
A week and a half.
Yeah, boy, how time flies. But when Campbell got out of the race, it was an opportunity for Poizner now to draw a firm distinction between himself and Meg Whitman.
Right.
Well, sounds like the guy needs to do that.
Well, and these numbers reflect. I mean, I believe Field was taking their survey between the 15th and 18th of January.
Snapshot in time.
Yeah, so it's right after Campbell got out. But I think that, you know, there's a similarity here between Poizner and Brown, where you've got supporters of both candidates saying, hey, when are you going to pull the trigger? And when is this campaign going to start? It's already started for Meg Whitman, and, you know, we'll see if there's sort of a tortoise and hare approach here and whether Whitman, who's sort of out plodding along from the beginning, is going to end up reaping the rewards of the slow starts to her competitors.
Let's make a quick Department of Corrections correction.
Okay.
Field poll was sampling in the field January 5th through 17th, so even earlier.
Well, that's weird because that's before Tom Campbell was out of the race.
Well,
that might
be a
typo.
And they clearly, you know, there was talk that Campbell was going to get out of the race, so Field clearly said if Campbell is out –
12 days seems like a really long time. Well, anyway, we don't have to talk about
the details. Let me dig deeper into the numbers. Oh, let's, please. It's a podcast.
I'll get a shovel. Hold on.
If Campbell had been in the race, according to the field data, it would have been Whitman 36, Poizner 9, Campbell 22. So it would have been – so and then with him out, it's Whitman 45, Poizner 17. So, you know, again, extrapolating where the, you know, where the support went, I mean, you know – it's well, actually, it's all over the place. I mean, I would argue are there a few more undecided?
That's a heck of an extrapolation.
I know. Thank you. Boy, how smart of me. There are a few more undecideds, and, you know, I mean, they both ticked up, but Whitman ticked up slightly more. So,
right.
I mean, you know, people are going to discount the numbers. They always do. But the conversation is out there. The conversation still becomes that Whitman only further increases her lead over Poizner. And again, these ads, you know, it's so funny that people don't think about radio. Here I am, a public radio reporter, talking, defending radio. We don't have any money because we're public radio.
And Meg Whitman doesn't advertise.
Yeah, right. Well, we don't take advertising.
I know.
Not that kind of advertising.
That's another podcast.
Yeah. But I'm not a frequent listener to FM commercial radio. I'm not being an elitist. I just don't listen to it a lot.
You're not a smooth jazz guy.
I'm an iPod kind of guy. But I can't help but note that every time I flip to a commercial radio station, regardless of the format, I hear a Meg Whitman commercial. I mean, it really is saturation of the radio airwaves. Even the ad she just released this week on her plan to cut back on welfare, reform welfare, whatever the plan might actually be. We haven't seen the details of it. That ad was up instantaneously. I heard it on a top 40 radio station Wednesday afternoon.
Well, and we'll know more in the next week or so when her formal spending report is released. We're going off numbers that were released by her
provided
campaign
provided by the
today.
Campaign, yeah.
But you know, the speculation, I mean, the number I've heard tossed around there is that she's spending upwards of $2 million per month on radio. I mean, that's a lot of radio.
Yeah. Because radio is far cheaper than television
to
do statewide blanketing, yeah.
Right. And that's – so, I mean, again, she's had the race to herself. The question is how much longer she will have how much longer she will. What I found really interesting is how Campbell's departure affected not only the governor's race but the U.S. Senate race. I mean, we saw some poll numbers there that let's go to the numbers, John.
Let's talk about those. I'm the numbers guy on this podcast. You're the color commentary. I'm the play-by-play.
You're the Pat Summerall, and I'm the John Madden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm not sure that reflects well on either of us there.
No.
Okay, so the field poll numbers for the Senate race, which came out on Thursday, were, and again, showing the impact of Tom Campbell in the race, Campbell at 30, Carly Fiorina at 25, Chuck DeVore at 6, with almost 4 in 10, almost 40% undecided. So a big undecided, but automatically puts Campbell in the lead in that race from where that race had been shaped up as just between Fiorina and DeVore.
And what's interesting from those initial numbers, and I haven't really drilled down there, but we had talked about the possibility of this happening last week and how Campbell's entry into the Senate race would impact the race and who Campbell would draw support from. And just at first glance, I mean, I don't have the numbers, the head-to-head Fiorina DeVore numbers from the last field poll, but it would seem that a number of conservatives who are Chuck DeVore's base, at least based on this initial snapshot, seem to feel comfortable with Tom Campbell. I mean, we had asked, you know, I think rhetorically, whether whether Campbell would be drawing further from Fiorina, who had sort of positioned herself as a conservative mainstream alternative to DeVore, or from the DeVore sort of the, you know, for lack of a better phrase, sort of the Tea Party contingent that seems to be the core of DeVore's base. And based on these early numbers, it looks like Campbell might be drawing from both, but certainly cutting into to a DeVore's conservative base.
Well, and you know, some of this easily could be Campbell's name ID.
Sure.
I mean, Tom
Campbell, been in the news a lot.
He's been in the news a lot. He's run for office a lot. He's run for statewide office before. So he's known to Republican Party voters. But, you know, the Fiorina people clearly jumping quickly, very quickly, into the beat up Tom Campbell race. They did it as soon as he jumped in the race last week, back at it again this week. And, you know, I find some of it interesting when the criticisms, this is kind of an aside out of the main race, but it's just an observation from those of us who cover politics. The criticisms of Campbell as Arnold Schwarzenegger's budget director, coming from Fiorina's people about the spending of the state government, coming from the Fiorina campaign, which is run by people who used to work for the Schwarzenegger campaign and administration.
Not lost on us.
Not lost on us of who has heard these people defend Arnold Schwarzenegger before to now representing Fiorina attacking Schwarzenegger. Again, this goes back to something you and I have talked about before. Arnold Schwarzenegger is not on the ballot in 2010, but Arnold Schwarzenegger is definitely going to be part of all of these discussions, all of these races.
Well, and big picture, I mean, I think we're going to look back on 2010, and this is the week that the campaign feels like it really started. I mean, it began and began with Campbell's maneuvering.
Mark it here.
You know, sort of Campbell's maneuvering last week was sort of a pre-trembler, a foreshock, right? Okay. I don't know. But really, with the Senate results in Massachusetts this week, it seemed to kick everything into gear. Democrats are panicking. Republicans are sort of doing their preemptive celebratory dancing around that everything's in play, that Barbara Boxer's a dead duck. And now with the release of these poll numbers, it really feels like we're getting into the season here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Let's talk about the Massachusetts race, because I am just exhausted with the spin about what the Massachusetts race means for California. I appreciate all of you party political loyalists and fighters out there who have continued to tell me what Massachusetts means for California, good, bad, whatever.
Right.
But as we know, Martha Coakley, the Democratic candidate in Massachusetts, could she – oh, man, that's just a stinker of a campaign, but that's just observation from afar.
Right.
Lost to Scott Brown, the Republican former centerfold. Is that true? Does he do some centerfold when he was
younger?
I
don't read those kinds of magazines.
I just – you know, I believe everything I
hear
on TV.
But I'll ask my wife.
Okay. And so everybody says, oh, you can extrapolate X or Y for California.
I think X and Y are both true.
Thank you. I don't know if you can. I mean, you know, I understand, you know, there's the, you know, concern that Democrats are weak. I completely agree that national politics are going to play into the boxer race. They have to. You know, you're talking about the U.S. Senate and actions that are going to happen between now and November. But I don't know that you can take the Massachusetts electorate and layer them over the California electorate. And I mean, you know, it's just
political.
I know they're right. Theoretical. They're blue states in the national dialogue, but
political narratives are written in hindsight, and now it's sort of people are taking a first whack at it. If in November Democrats lose the House, Barbara Boxer loses her Senate seat, and Jerry Brown is not the governor-elect of California, we could look back to this and say, see, the signs have been there since Scott Brown won his election in Massachusetts. If Boxer ekes out a reelection, Jerry Brown wins by 5 points, and the Democrats lose 15 House seats, and Republicans pick up a couple seats in the legislature here, you know, it's sort of a mixed result. I mean, could 2010 be a rehash of 1994? Yeah, I think a lot of people think that it could. It could be a bad year for Democrats. I mean, we've seen the signs out there, you know, for weeks. I think that the Scott Brown election is sort of a road sign along a road that we already knew we were on, right, potentially. But, you know, not to sound too cliche about it, it's a long way till November, and there are a lot of differences between you know, between the specifics of that particular campaign and what's going to be on the ballot in November in California.
And I know I run the risk of having people who are going to use other anecdotal evidence to now email me back and say, oh, yeah, but John, what about X? But, I mean, you know, look at other times where California hasn't really fit into that national narrative of some tidal right. wave of politics. Look at 2006, where Democrats picked up all these things when there was anger with the Bush administration. Schwarzenegger won re-election, largely right. because if you looked who the candidate running against him, it wasn't a great campaign. I mean, you know, so you can go one after one after one. 2008, Obama did great in California. Did California Republicans lose their races for Congress? No.
No, but they did lose seats in the assembly, so, you know.
But bottom line, we're all playing the tea leaves game, and
right.
A lot of dynamics have to factor into this, not the least of which are the way these candidates run. And I think it is going right. to be very fascinating to see, as you talked about, in the Senate race, the Campbell-Fiorina DeVore differentiation there among rank-and-file Republicans. And I also wonder, again, whose campaign tries to reach out to nonpartisans, to decline-to-state voters? Will they? Because they do get to vote in that race
yep.
in June.
They do.
The other thing that, you know, we won't have a lot of time to talk about, but we would be kind of foolish to not at least mention in the discussion of the Senate race, is this Supreme Court ruling that came out. We're taping this on Thursday, so it came out today. This huge Supreme Court ruling that throws off the books all of these restrictions on corporate and
apparently,
union money.
Apparently.
Big money. Yeah, apparently. But big money, largely,
right.
out of limitations on how they can be funding for these federal races.
Federal races.
And federal races is the key there because California is different. But they will right. impact the U.S. Senate race, which is a federal race in California. Or
and
a lot of people think
races.
They're going to impact it. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, for about 100 years, there have been restrictions on corporations directly participating in political campaigns. And they've also been barred from participating in these federal 527 or independent expenditures. That was partially reversed today by the U.S. Supreme Court. The court ruled that the corporations they maintained the
disclosure.
Prohibition. No, they hmm. they maintained the prohibition on corporations directly participating in giving to candidates. But allowed them to participate in independent expenditures. Now, in California, we already have laws on the books, state laws on the books, that corporations and unions are already allowed to give directly to candidates and play in independent expenditure campaigns. And so it won't have a big effect on races like governor or you know, other state races. But like you said, we could see it in the U.S. Senate race. We could see it in competitive congressional races up and down the state.
And there are several congressional seats that are being targeted by one party or the other because
right.
they sense a weakness in the incumbent. And you know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, you accurately said we already have, you know, the wild, wild west of independent expenditures. Independent, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
You know, it almost, I guess, you know, if you're somewhere else in the country, it would be interesting. You know, you might want to look at what's happened in California in the last few years since we've been able to have those unlimited contributions as an example of what you might have in all these different races. We may be, you know, some
right.
roadmap for where they're going.
And a brief description, I mean, at least my read on what that is that the candidates' campaigns become less and less important. And the coordination of the independent expenditure committees with each other which is legal, becomes more of the focus. And I think we're really going to see that writ large in the governor's race in California this year. Democrats believe that if, you know, that Jerry Brown is going to – that we have campaign contribution limits. And even if every Democrat in California maxed out to Jerry Brown, it wouldn't be enough to compete with Meg Whitman or Steve Poizner, the resources that they have available to
them.
Their
personal resources.
So I think we're going to see very shortly here, we already saw the Democratic Governors Association say they were going to form a independent expenditure on Brown's behalf. And I think we're going to see other groups and individuals that we're all very familiar with begin to organize here in the next couple of weeks and begin the sort of the parallel Brown campaign, if you will. And I think on the Whitman side, too, or the Republican side as well, you're going to start seeing an anti-Jerry Brown expenditure race starting to get underway here. So maybe we can talk about it next week.
Yeah, and I just think this – I mean, you know, bottom line, it's going – you know, this is going to be just a hell of an expensive year in politics. I mean, just the – you know – maybe it's just people like you and me who keep tabs of how much money has been spent historically and how much is going to be spent. You know, all the records seem like they are in jeopardy this year.
It's jaw-dropping. It really is.
All of them are in record.
Yeah.
Well, on a different track of money.
Yes.
See? Transition. Money. And money discussions out of Washington. Mm-hmm. See? See where I'm going?
Nope.
You with me?
Nope.
God. Come on. The governor and the four legislative leaders, were. We're in Washington this week, hat in hand, asking for money. This is the ongoing discussion of how much money can we get to help balance the books in our big $20 billion deficit. The governor has penciled in $7 to $8 billion in federal assistance to balance the books. And, of course, if he doesn't get seven of that, he has said we should eliminate a variety of social services programs.
In order.
Yeah. And, you know, and we've talked about the policy there. Let's just talk a little bit about the way this has gone so far, watching, you know, what's happened there. Been a lot of pot shots back and forth here about the rhetoric of, you know, who's involved, who's not, who's serious, who's not. The governor's office, different Democrats on the Hill. The Speaker of the Assembly got into it in her discussion with the online news site Politico, talking about the governor being interested in his legacy.
Reprising comments she made in Capital Weekly last week. CapitalWeekly.net, Capital with an O.
Your promo's coming at the end.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, there are a lot of pot shots.
Yeah.
Back and forth here. There's a lot of rhetoric being flown around. You know, the governor's office has pounced on every one of them saying, well, if these people don't care that we only get 78 cents to the dollar, which some will dispute that number,
right,
you know, then, you know, they – you know, we're fighting for what's right. Zoe Lofgren, the congresswoman from San Jose, told me in a phone interview for a piece I did this week, you know, basically said that she thought that the governor kind of aligned the governor to her two kids when they were young, holding their breath when they didn't get what they wanted. And that, you know, inferring, you know, and, you know, saying that, you know, the governor doesn't act like he's had a role in governing the state all these years. It's in crisis.
Do kids really do that, or is that just an urban myth?
Mine aren't old enough to hold their breath yet. I'll get back to you.
And I haven't seen any breath holding.
But, you know, I don't know what to make of all this rhetoric. I mean, it did get toned down some. It was hotter and angrier before the governor and the leaders went to Washington. But really, at the end of the day, does the needle move on how much money we get? That's really all that matters.
No, I mean, I think, you know, the LAO, the legislative analyst, said a couple of weeks ago when he made his sort of budget projections, or his first critique and analysis of the governor's budget, he threw a number out there that we probably will get. He threw out the number $3 billion, in additional federal funds.
In one-time money is what he believes it'll be, not this systemic issue that the governor's been fighting.
You know, no one really knows. I don't know. I mean, I think that our needs and our desires are well known. I mean, the governor did meet with both U.S. senators, met with Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, met with the Education Secretary Arne Duncan. You know, I mean, these – I think there will be – there's agreement that there will be some federal money, additional federal money coming into California, and no doubt everyone will take credit for it if and when it does. Whether or not this rhetorical battle matters beyond the personal jabs that we all love to report so much, I don't think so.
Well, and even that, I just wonder if – you know, I believe that a lot of these – you know, with all due respect to the leaders who go and they think an in-person meeting is more important or more valuable than a phone meeting or, you know, whatever they would do otherwise. Skype. Who knows?
But Twitter.
But, I think by and large these are photo ops. These are photo ops that are designed to get news coverage, that are designed to say we're serious about this and we're – and I wonder if even that really worked in this week. I mean, you can't control the rest of the news cycle, but look at this whole Massachusetts race. The whole Washington press corps is obsessed with that and the future of healthcare. I don't think the governor in California have gotten that much coverage.
No, but
you know, in those places, and I don't know how much they've gotten even statewide. I would debate that.
Look, Schwarzenegger is still a big name in Washington. He still commands attention when somebody from his own state is back there beating him up, taking a shot at him, like the speaker was this week. I mean, when have you seen Karen Bass in Politico before? I mean, there is it works on some level, on some degree, you know. But I think a lot of this is real, real inside baseball, and probably doesn't, as you say, move the needle tremendously.
Inside baseball, which is exactly what we're all about.
Good. Batter up.
Which leads to your plug. Anthony York.
Leads to a pitch.
Anthony
York. Come on, inside baseball, pitch.
Okay.
Stay with me, Myers.
Okay, good, because we're about 24 minutes into this podcast. You now have 45 seconds. Go.
Well,
plug, as they used to say, what was the show? Plug away.
Al Checky's hair.
No.
Okay.
Anthony.
Sorry. No, but Capital Weekly this week launched a new California politics blog. Just what we all need. Another blog in conjunction.
Do people have time to read one after mine?
No.
Okay. But if they do.
But in conjunction with the Los Angeles Times, which has been very exciting and exhausting for us. So you can now see this on the LA Times website, latimes.com. Soon coming to the Capital Weekly website as soon as we figure this technical stuff out. Hopefully by the time this podcast is posted.
So you just you're just no rest for the weary in blogging now and
yes.
Writing.
You know it's bad. I've been promoted to blogger. That's rough.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Congratulations on making it to blogger.
Yeah, woo.
You know, such is the
next
world.
Up troll.
such is the world of journalism here yes. In 2010.
Yeah.
Well, check it out. And check us out next week.
There's a checky.
As always.
Checky it out.
You are just rife with the Al Checky references. You know, somebody's going to call you. I don't know where Al... Do anybody know where Al Checky is these days?
He's going to be here in studio next week with us.
Someone will email me and tell me where it is. But needless to say, he will be contacting Anthony York about Anthony's long-going discussion. Anyway, that'll do it. For Anthony York from Anthony York the blogger. From Capital Weekly, and now writing at the LA Times, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.